Because seriously, when's the last time you were sober enough to wake up at 5:30 a.m. to listen live? Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. The opinions expressed in the following program are 100% correct and have zero chance of changing. This is Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, good morning. It's 5:33. It's Brady and Walker getting you set for the weekend. Another Friday. I'm Andrew Walker. He is Greg Brady, sitting right there as he always does, right across from me, getting ready for the show. Hey, Greg. NFL Thursday Nighter last night. We talked to the show Thursday about if there could be some sort of moral victory for San Diego in this game, even if they lost. We agreed that there could have been. I'm not sure if we got it last night because all of a sudden the Chargers with back-to-back divisional losses are now kind of in the ether as one of those wild card teams. And we're left with this resounding feeling again with Denver that the AFC is really theirs to lose.
Yeah, I don't think it was a moral victory. I don't think it ended up that way. And you're right. They are San Diego's going to have to prove some things. I think we almost... I know you like to use the word gifted. We almost did that regarding an AFC playoff spot. I guess I'm no less sure. I still think it's a weak conference, and they look like the momentum they built the second half of last season looks like it didn't carry over, but the same players are just as good, and they added some pieces.
They're a playoff team, definitely. That hasn't changed.
What's separated is Denver, despite, you know, a couple wobbly weeks, even winning games, they looked a little wobbly against the Jets. They haven't pasted everybody like they did out of the gate two seasons ago, and certainly like they did about halfway through last season. They are going to be the one seed in the AFC, and they were the one seed last year. They were the one seed the year before that, even though they lost to the Baltimore Ravens. That's where it's at since Peyton Manning arrived there and took over for Tim Tebow. This team's transformed to 13-3 years, and they'll probably have another 13-3 year this year. There probably only are two more losses max right on Denver's schedule before it's all said and done, and the playoffs have to go through there.
It is difficult to project, though, because I wonder, you go back to that Super Bowl, and what a disappointing Super Bowl it was. You had the offense of the Denver Broncos seemingly unstoppable, and then you had the Seattle Seahawks with one of the best defenses we had seen in years and years. This was the immovable object in the irresistible force, and it was just it was embarrassing. And we said the next day, you play that game over right now, you're not going to see a score like that.
Same thing's not happening. No.
Yeah.
No, it didn't feel like it was meant to be a blowout, and it's one of those scenarios where Denver didn't bring their game, and from the opening safety to the next interception that gave Russell Wilson a short field. It was real easy. But for Denver the rest of the way, they had their stumbles. They blew a big lead against New England in that Sunday night game last year. And we wondered whether their defense was a little leaky. We wondered whether they could run the ball for first downs when they had to. This team looks 100% better. And those aren't even issues. Now, they go to New England next week, but that's not even the New England team they were playing last year. I'm seeing three straight roadies, New England, Oakland, St. Louis. They'll host Miami, go to Kansas City, host Buffalo, go to San Diego, go to Cincy, host Oakland. There's two losses max the rest of the way in the remaining nine games.
To me, there were two teams that had the potential to maybe go into Denver and prove something, whether it be now, whether it be in the postseason. And that was, believe it or not, San Diego, right? I put San Diego in the same category almost this year of Dallas. Yeah, we like to roll our eyes, or the public likes to roll their eyes at Tony Romo and Philip Rivers. But guys can learn, right? Guys can learn over the course of a long career. And even in glimpses, we saw it last night. Philip Rivers might have his most dangerous offensive team as a veteran quarterback that he ever has.
Yeah, just a fantastic tying touchdown drive, even to make it 7-7 in the second quarter.
When nothing was going their way at that point.
Yeah. So he makes that 3rd and 20 pass to Antonio Gates. Gates just looks so smooth. I know some people say, hey, Antonio Gates is old. I just see an experienced guy who is healthy, who is catching the football right now. But they couldn't run it. They couldn't run it against Denver's defense, which was a big factor.
So one was San Diego, and the other, of course, is the Indianapolis Colts. And, I mean, we had Clark Judge on this week, and he thinks that Indy might still be the team to beat when it comes to the AFC. And I might not agree, but I'm not going to pick it up and down Bloor Street saying they're not, right? I think it's a legit opinion to have. Right, Andrew Luck is a generational quarterback that all of a sudden has more and more playmakers in that lineup. If the Colts went into Denver and won, would you be just blown away beyond belief?
In the playoffs?
Blown away or semi-surprised?
Less surprised.
There's a difference.
You're right, less surprised than when Baltimore did it 2 years ago. More surprised than if New England had done it last year in the AFC title game. There was not much New England could do to get out of the blocks. But yeah, Indy's going to have to, if Indy's going to do that anyway, they're going to have to load up on their division, which isn't that great, right? You play Houston, Tennessee, and Jacksonville. You know, you got one game left against each of them, and you load up those wins. They play the Browns. They play Washington. They have to, they've got to be an 11-12 win team themselves, get themselves a week off, and make the playoffs go through there so Andrew Luck doesn't have to go on the road.
Lots to get to this morning on Brady and Walker. Breaking Steve Nash news last night. Is his career over? And the Blue Jays are looking to re-sign Melky Cabrera and also raise ticket prices to the ire of many. 539 Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Everything you're talking about, they're talking about. Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sends it across to Lenny. The wrist shot bounces off the stick of Krug. But in front, Clutterbuck scores from Matt Martin. Again, the Bruins unable to clear the zone. And the Islanders go up 3-1.
5:43, Brady and Walker, good morning. The Boston Bruins lose last night to the New York Islanders. They lose to their old goalie, Chad Johnson, and they lose their captain in Zdeno Chara, 4 to 6 weeks. I suppose it's not the end of the world, but we had already had that discussion of the Bruins being just a little off kilter this season.
A little
this isn't going to make things easier at all.
No, they fall to 4-5 here tomorrow night, of course, at the Air Canada Center to play the Leafs. The Leafs have been waiting pensively and for obvious reasons, missing the game in Ottawa on Wednesday night, the game that didn't happen that's been rescheduled for November 9th. But this Boston team, we saw Nicholas Svedberg in goal last night. Maybe you shouldn't read too much into that. They played their former backup, as you mentioned, Chad Johnson. It's an emotional game for Johnny Boychuk coming back, and maybe less so for Nick Leddy. He's not exactly the longtime Bruin Boychuk was, and didn't win the cup there. But Zdeno Chara out 4 to 6 weeks, potentially with a left knee ligament injury. He flattened John Tavares. Tavares just kind of did one of those Chara things and skated right into the big beast. And you know, it looked like, is Tavares going to be injured by that? And they're still trying to figure whether the ligament injury happened on that particular play or not, because he finished the rest of the shift and Chara didn't go down, but he didn't come back after that either.
I've said it since the first week of the season, watching this team play. They're in a bit of trouble, right? I mean, we like to look at teams like the Bruins that have been very good and very competitive for so long and just assume they'll be there again because they wear black and orange and they have the spoke B on their chest. And it doesn't always work that way. The Bruins have some holes, right? They had cap trouble and they had to move out Johnny Boychuk. Not the key to everything, but there's a real important piece of their team. This Tyler Seguin deal, you knew eventually there'd be a day where he's kind of the only big guy playing in the NHL from this trade, and that the discussion would be, wow, could you imagine if they had that guy right now? It's here already, and we're like less than a calendar or just over a calendar year out. And don't get me wrong, I like Riley Smith. Matt Fraser could play in my bottom six, if I'm the Toronto Maple Leafs, but he is what he is. But the key to the deal was Louis Erickson. And the Boston Bruins underestimated what this guy was. He's fallen off a little bit. He's not going to get 40 points this year. And that's no good when you consider that Tyler Seguin might win the Hart Trophy.
No, and he missed 20 games last year. His playoffs were fine. He had a five-point playoff run. Riley Smith was excellent in the playoffs, especially in the first round against the Red Wings. But you're right. Does Tyler Seguin on the Boston Bruins last year get squeezed past Montreal in seven games? Maybe so. Maybe that's a big enough distinction to add Seguin up the middle with Krejci and Bergeron and who they were using at the time, obviously. A lot of guys slumped, right, in the playoffs last year. Brad Marchand couldn't buy a goal.
Right.
But now, yeah, is it coming home a little bit? You still got guys. Krejci and Bergeron aren't past their prime. Lucic just is not past his prime. I'm sure they're still a playoff team. I'm sure they are. But I'm also, yeah, I think the signs of age and maybe the signs of Peter Chiarelli tweaking a bit too much. Boychuk's not the guy I would have traded. And people say, what can you trade Dougie Hamilton? Does Matt Bartkowski or Torrey Krug have the same value? No, probably not. You're not getting 2 second. Well, I shouldn't say that about Krug. But either way, he was a really important piece of that particular team. And you're not wrong, Andrew, in that now they're, even the team that gives Simone Gagné a tryout, really, really good teams wouldn't have to use, really deep well, teams wouldn't have to yes. use Simone Gagné this year.
They're using a mix of Simone Gagné is playing on the top line, and they got a kid up from Providence, Seth Griffith's playing on the first line with Krejci and Lucic. Brad Marchand's had difficulty scoring this season, right? Char and Zeidenberg, they already look a year older, and now yeah. Char is out 4 to 6. There's holes, make no mistake. And Louis Erickson, it's not like they're going to bump this guy to the fourth line because he's the centerpiece of that trade. They're going to let him try to play it out. And he's been no good, right? This team is, yes, and like yeah. like many teams, when you criticize them and say they're struggling, it doesn't mean they're going to be with Carolina and Buffalo in the Connor McDavid hunt. But this is not the Bruins we've been used to.
It's the first extended injury for Chara since he's been in Boston. And when you think he's been there about 8 seasons now, this is his 9th season, as a matter of fact. And he's played, these are the games Chara's played, 80, 77, 80, 80, 81, 79, the full 48 game year, the short year, and 77 last year. They don't know what this is like. This is new territory for Boston. In the post-Joe Thornton era, playing without Zdeno Chara.
And we're less than 10 games in, and it's tough sometimes to learn a whole bunch from one game, but, I mean, we had the Red Wings come in here, and like people always do, they're burying the Red Wings, and we had a conversation of Henrik Zetterberg, and you had talked about, boy, yes. how old he looks. Henrik yes. Zetterberg has dominated the league for the last week. Detroit dominated the Red Wings. I wonder what we see from the Bruins. Is it the same story? Right? Is Detroit a better team than Boston this year? Maybe. Right? They might be.
They look like boys against men last year in the playoffs, though. But that was Chara playing at that time, right? They didn't never had a shot at winning that particular first round series last year.
But they also lost 30 goal again off that top line, who fit really well. They haven't replaced them.
No, they haven't replaced them.
And Boychuk's gone as well. It's interesting. 550, Brady and Walker.
It sure is.
be interesting to see how it all turns out. Ryan Fabro is in our producer.
Disagree.
So look at today in history, now and then.
Now and then. A hopefully but potentially not entertaining look back at some of the great and not so great moments in this day's history. I'll be
back in time. Ryan Favreau's in. Now what happens
Have
here?
At it, Hoss.
You slap just a bunch of info together. It's just sort of like a giant roast beef sandwich of information. Takes you about 20 seconds to do it.
Right.
Let's have it. Let's go. Yeah,
let's do this.
Yeah.
October the 24th, way back into a great year, 1929.
That was a good year.
It's the Black Thursday. It's the great stock market crash on the New York Stock Exchange. There it's the music I was looking for.
You were. Yeah.
Are you guys into the stock game, Walker? You look like a real stocks guy.
You know what? It's always appealed to me, but it's also kind of like, you know, going to the horse track. I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
No. I mean, I've got some things here and there, but there's a couple things I do check every day. It can get a bit obsessive, so
really?
I try not to.
Yeah. Okay. I just thought listeners would like to know your financial status.
Yeah.
I would say if you're going to invest, here's a tip to all the listeners out there. Invest in toilets. Doesn't matter what happens to our economy, we're always going to need them.
We're
always going to need toilets.
High flow.
Doesn't matter.
I like, do you ever see the ones with the two buttons? You can have a small flush. You can have a big flush. Yeah. Some people have their houses. That's what I want.
Things are
big flush, small flush.
Knock on wood. Maybe there's like a robot apocalypse or something. But things are never getting so bad in this country that we're not going to.
Yeah, but what if people
to use the washroom in toilets?
What if more people go with the if it's yellow, let it mellow rule? As you know, still, just to conserve water.
You still need a toilet.
Can I move on?
Yeah. Yes. Go ahead. Feel free.
Do a lot of prep for this.
I'm passionate. Right. Got to get your prepping.
1982. Rambo. First Blood. Number one. The number one hit. It was a great movie. Do we like the Rambo series? There was four movies. It started with First Blood.
I love the first one. The Brian Dennehy is the sheriff. That's fantastic. Amazing. Villainry, right?
And then it ended with, what was the fourth one was just called like John Rambo
it's
or
just
Rambo?
Called Rambo.
And
that
it was
in 2008. He's in Burma.
Ooh. There was
snakes and stuff.
There was a lot of blood and guts in that movie. It was ridiculous.
Just gratuitous violence.
Before he gets recruited, he's capturing snakes and selling them for a living, which I don't find would be terribly profitable in a country that has lots of snakes.
You don't know that for sure.
I can't tell.
And 1988 on this date, Mike Bossy retires. 10 seasons in the NHL. Unbelievable stats. 9 of them, he scored 50-plus. 5 of them, 60-plus. His worst season was 38 goals in his last season. And he was remarkably handsome. Last part's not true.
One of those facts is not true.
Well, yeah, I don't think he was less than unattractive.
I didn't say that.
Of course you weigh in.
I don't know. Billy Smith looked like a nice guy to have a beer with.
He likes white wine, Billy Smith. I heard this. I know this.
Oh, he's a connoisseur?
Apparently.
We do, I think, and maybe because he's always been such a quiet, off the radar guy, too. Mike Bossy's statistics are alarmingly impressive.
Amazing.
He just didn't play that long.
No, I forget the injury factor, whether it's sort of, you know, is it like Steve Nash, who we're going to talk about after six, is he absolutely, positively couldn't go anymore, or he didn't want to be playing 60 games a year and scoring 9 goals? And in and out of the line.
And getting paid $38,000 a year.
Yeah. Because, I mean, his last year was a 75-point season, and it was a big drop-off from the previous year.
That Islanders dynasty team was like the last team where it's just chock-full of Hall of Famers, and today they all have, like, second jobs.
Oh. Yeah, it's true.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the last. Because after them followed the Oilers. And none of those Oilers are suffering from financial difficulties.
Some of them are making bad hockey decisions.
Some.
In front offices. Yeah.
Well, what about Mark Lamb? You don't know how he's doing.
You don't.
Right. 1992. The Jays. They won their first World Series ever on this date. 22 years ago. It was 12.
So this is the Otis Nixon bunt date, not the Joe Carter home run.
Correct.
That was yesterday.
Yeah, it was yesterday.
I heard the segment.
As a kid, I always thought it was very cool that Joe Carter ended 3 consecutive Blue Jays playoff series. One with the Otis Nixon bunt. Another, he caught a fly ball to eliminate the White Sox in the ALCS, and then the home run.
There you go.
Who would have been the Game 7 starters for a Braves-Blue Jays Game 7?
Would have been would Morris have been going again? He wasn't pitching well in that series.
No, they kind of went Key, because Key was a reliever, right? No, they did start Jimmy Key in Game 4, and they came in and brought him in Game 6, so they couldn't have gone back to him.
We'll let you know later.
Yeah, really. I know.
Happy birthday, Jamal Mares. He's 40. And the number one song from...
You didn't let us guess.
Well, we got to go. Oh. You wasted time trying to figure out pitchers.
I'm still
rotations
going to.
From 22
I still
years
am.
Ago.
Very distracted.
Getting you set for the Primetime Sports Roundtable
tonight.
That's
the only birthday?
What a hit this was. It was Dion with Runaround Sue. You can't trust a girl named Runaround Sue. I think you all know that.
Oh, I think the first part was a nickname. I could be wrong. I don't think parents would do that. Maybe it's a middle name.
There we go.
Good points by everybody. 555, Brady and Walker. Steve Nash might have played his last game in the NBA. We'll discuss it next. Is he the most underrated Canadian athlete of all time? Or as Michael Grange said, simply the best? Eesh. Tough to do that with all the hockey guys in this country.
My pleasure.
6:02. We'll get into that. Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Back injury forces Steve Nash to miss the upcoming season.
I don't think this is unexpected necessarily, but it's certainly not pleasing to the ear to hear it end this way for him. He's a special player. He's a special human being. He's done a lot of great things for the game. He's done a lot of great things for this country, obviously. It's just sad to see someone like this go out of the game.
You're listening to Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Have we seen the last of Steve Nash? It is 6:03, Brady and Walker. That voice you heard was former Raptors GM Brian Colangelo, who, of course, had Steve Nash in Phoenix, nearly signed him to a free agent deal here in Toronto as well. And we get word yesterday, Greg, that Steve Nash in the final year of his deal will not play. That back injury too much, meaning the next time that he is fully healthy, if he ever gets there, he won't have a contract. Have we seen the last of him on an NBA court?
Well, it sounds like he's admitting as much, too, saying, my family's in L.A. He went through, a much publicized divorce. We see Russell Wilson's getting divorced this week, and that got much publicized. Usually you don't hear about it, or it's under the radar, and I agree there's a lot of stuff that's none of our business. But he's the one that's put it out there, had kind of a protracted money argument with his ex-wife about alimony and child support, but he says he wants to stay in L.A. A big reason he wanted to sign in L.A. was to be close and have the proximity to his family. So it doesn't sound like if the Washington Wizards offered him a tryout or the new look Charlotte Hornets offered him a tryout that he'd take it a year from now. And now we're all saying, what's in it for the team to bring him in? This isn't a guy saying I can't play till January. This is ruling a guy out for the season. The season goes until April 10th.
Yeah, it's a long time.
And no matter how much nerve damage there is, no matter how bad your body is, it's incredible to think that there's no, with modern medicine, there's no way he could play a basketball game 6 months from now or 8 months from now. But he knows that. His doctor knows it. And that probably is the last time it's a real disappointing ending. And I mentioned this last night on Twitter, Andrew. There's not too many endings that are so sudden. Sometimes concussion hits, boom, you'll never play again. We understand. It was like that for Steve Young. It was a little like that for Troy Aikman. But I can't think of a case where it's so blatant, especially for a Canadian sporting icon. Gretzky, Lemieux, Yzerman, they can kind of call their shot and walk away. Steve Nash isn't going to do that.
And Gretzky certainly did. There was no farewell tour, right? It was about 10 days away.
Maybe a week you knew when his last game would be.
So is Steve Nash underappreciated? And I ask that because we've already kind of played a role this morning in that. I mean, the night before we discuss all the big stories, and of course, and where goes what? What do we come out of the gates with it at 6 a.m.? Here on Brady and Walker, what's the biggest story? And there was some debate whether it was even Steve Nash or not, because he's not front of mind all the time on our sports conscience. Here he is, this 6'2 Canadian white kid from British Columbia. It's one of the best basketball players of a generation.
Who's got one college interested in him, one college. Yeah. That's been well documented. Michael Grange's great column. You heard his voice on the intro here. And Jay Triano trying to recruit him for him to play still in Canada. And he says, take a shot on Santa Clara. And he goes, and he's an all-star, and his number's retired, and they beat a two seed in the NCAA tournament. And then you're thinking, nice, because what are we talking? 2% of college basketball players even would get a sniff of the NBA, and even fewer of that 2% would make it and play 3 or 4 years? Like, to then be considered one of the great point guards ever, to be a two-time MVP, the best free throw shooter ever in the NBA. And yet, here's that. There's also that link, though, Andrew, that I think makes him stand out. And is it a compliment or is it not? He's maybe, to me, he's one of the best team sport players in my lifetime in North America never to play in the finals or the Super Bowl for his team. Never made a finals, and that is...
Does that play into him not being appreciated?
Yeah, a little. I think a little bit. I do think that, yeah.
But the NBA...
And I'm not blaming him.
But the NBA is a league unlike any other sport, in my opinion anyway, where you're not... I mean, you are judged on titles, of course, but Jordan has 6, and LeBron's going to finish with God knows how many, and guys have 9 and 10 and 11 because... There's only 5 going guys on the court. you can build the dynasty. You can still build somewhat of a dynasty. So it's either you have six rings or you have no rings, right? And there's a lot of great Hall of Fame NBA players who don't have rings.
But very few have won the MVP, and very few have won it twice. Karl Malone won it twice. Charles Barkley won it once. Those are the two that should leap off the page for anybody. But since 1970, I think every other MVP's got a title besides Karl Malone, Charles Barkley, and Steve Nash. Allen Iverson's another one, but he obviously got his team to the finals and ran into just a juggernaut in L.A. I'm not saying it diminishes his accomplishments, but it would increase his legend had he got
there, and had he
won. We say that about a lot of athletes.
And their best chance was that year where things went haywire against the San Antonio Spurs, and they got robbed, frankly, of an NBA Finals appearance.
But it's really easy. It's tough for me. The comment is jarring. Is he Canada's greatest athlete ever? And we always, I don't even like the Lou Marsh type discussions. It's like, oh, look, a cyclist, you know, or a sprinter beat out an NHL player. And I don't want to.
A CFL running back won it last year.
Yeah,
right?
It's like walk up to people in the grocery store and ask them what their favorite fruit is, and you're going to get 10 different answers. But I will say this, 6 of the last 8 Hart Trophy winners haven't been from Canada. 7 of the last 8 Vezina Trophy winners haven't been from Canada. You know, Martin Brodeur is the last one. And are we getting another Vezina Trophy winner anytime soon? We go back Rask, Bobrovsky, Lundqvist, Thomas, Miller, and Kiprusoff before Brodeur. So, we're still the best in hockey. We know that. But we don't expect to infiltrate basketball quite like other nations have infiltrated hockey in terms of having excellent players that can compare to us. And that's why Nash was so unique, because he was the first.
Yeah, he was the first. And are we starting to infiltrate now? Yeah, we've had back-to-back number one picks from this country, which is very, very impressive.
But we're asking a lot for Andrew Wiggins to ever win an MVP award, right?
Course.
Or ever make an NBA final, or Anthony Bennett, or Nick Stauskas. I mean, a couple of these, we're hoping guys like Nick Stauskas and Tyler Ennis are in the league in 5 years. That's a good career.
Coming up later in the show, we do want to explore the what if. And what if Steve Nash had been a Raptor? What if Brian Colangelo could have lured him here? Would that have been an unmitigated disaster, knowing what we know now when it comes to Nash and Kyle Lowry? We'll discuss. It is 10 after 6. Brady and Walker, let's get you what you need to know on your Friday.
This is your Friday Morning Six-Pack. 6 things you need to start your day.
Number 6, do want to update you on what happened in sports, what's happening in sports in relation to, you know, this week and the crazy times we saw in Ottawa, the nation's capital. So, Canada last night was also played in San Jose before the Columbus Sharks game, and in Boston before the Bruins played the Islanders. It's a long moment of silence, as you'd expect, between the Flames and the Carolina Hurricanes last night as well. We would expect more of the same tomorrow night here at the ACC.
Well, and the Ottawa Redblacks will play tonight against the Alouettes. You've got the Sens and the Devils tomorrow out in Canada, so they're ready to get back to a semblance of normal. It'll start to feel a little more normal in Ottawa, as jarring as Wednesday was.
Also, the Leafs and Sens game that has been postponed, rescheduled to November the 9th. There was some thought, hey, maybe they just play it either tonight or last night, but November the 9th is the day. Number 5, the Toronto Blue Jays, for the first time in 5 years, raising ticket prices yesterday. This is something we will discuss on the show in the 6 o'clock hour, and then again at 7. You quantify this first by saying there's never been a ticket price increase that people have been happy with. It's like raising the taxes. Is this a gouge, or is this a financial inevitability?
It hasn't been done in 5 years. I'm sure it seems excessive to some. Here's what else you won't see. When a newspaper writes a story about it, they're not going to put a quote in for someone going, oh, yeah, well, that makes sense. They're going to put an angry guy.
Yeah.
Remember when we mentioned angry guy can't buy opening day tickets online? He shows up and they're all gone. He's angry about it. Those are the guys you get your quotes from. Those are the guys you take the pictures of. Yeah, we will talk about it a fair bit. You know, is there any sense that it's encouraging in that maybe the budget's going up as well? People seem to link those two. There aren't always linkable. But in this case, in such a pivotal year for the Blue Jays, with a lot of contracts ending this year and players coming into option years, it is important. People are going to watch the payroll and watch what they do in free agency.
And there's the link, right? As if you were outraged yesterday, what I found impressive, if there was a composed fan on Twitter that I went back and forth with and said something to the effect of, hey, this is the cost of doing business. I understand it, but I will have an eye on that payroll, right? With the Melky Cabrera news, my ticket prices are going up. It would be nice to re-sign Melky Cabrera with some of that revenue. Number four, NFL Thursday Nighter. The Denver Broncos offense, it's really good last night. Again, 35-21 over San Diego. When they needed it, the Chargers couldn't get a stop.
Yeah, it's balanced, too, and that's the thing. Denver's running the ball a lot like they were when No. Sean Marino was there. Ronnie Hillman, they're real impressed with 20 carries, 109 yards. The one thing about Denver is, remember, they had a run for a long time where they could put anybody. They put a guy named Robert Griffiths or Orlandis Gary. After the Terrell Davis years, they could stick anybody in there and he'd get 1,000 yards. And the Denver running game, with how good their offensive line is, giving Peyton Manning lots of protection, he wasn't sacked last night, is opening a lot of holes for the running game, too. So it's very balanced. I don't think anyone doubts, Andrew, they're going to be the one seed in the AFC. It's just a matter of who's coming there in the second round of the playoffs.
Number three, according to John Heyman of CBS Sports, the Toronto Blue Jays are ready to sit down and have begun negotiations on a new deal with Melky Cabrera. Will this go first to a qualifying offer? Jays are expected to do that. We'll discuss. Number two, World Series resumes tonight in San Francisco for Game 3, Royals and Giants tied up at 1. We have the game for you at 8 p.m. right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Wilner and Casey Jansen, your pregame show at 7. And number one thing you need to know, Zdeno Chara injured last night. It's bad news for the Bruins, Greg. He's out 4 to 6 weeks with a knee injury.
Yeah, we'll get deep into that with Elliot Friedman coming up at 7:22. As the report isn't good, the Bruins will play their first game without Zdeno Chara in a long, long time. Zdeno Chara's teammates on the blue line when he first got to Boston: Paul Mara, Brad Stewart, Andrew Alberts, Jason York, and Aaron Ward. It's incredible. Been a long time, incredible. And it's been Chara carrying that blue line for a long, long time.
At 6:22, Jim Henderson, Canadian Major League reliever with the Milwaukee Brewers, will join us. His thoughts on the World Series and why are bullpens so volatile? Can the Toronto Blue Jays flip theirs around next season? But first, Brady Walker's ticket window is open, courtesy of the Great Blue Heron Casino. We want to send you next week to the ACC as Toronto takes on the Buffalo Sabres. Name us that player. We'll give you three clues throughout the morning. Here is clue number one. He played college hockey for the Buckeyes. Your next clue coming up at 7:14 this morning. A chance to win at 8:14.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Back at it. Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
World Series Game 3 shifting back to San Francisco tonight after the Giants get that split. We'll have it for you beginning at 8 p.m. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Mike Wilner, your pregame show at 7. It is 6:24 on Brady and Walker.
Looking forward to World Series Game 3 tonight. It's on Sportsnet. It's, as we noted, a series that's feels anew. We might feel the air's let out of the balloon if the Giants had won Game 2 and handily at that.
Certainly.
They needed to dig in a little bit. Couple injuries, maybe, including Tim Lincecum in the bullpen. But it's going to be fascinating. I was railing yesterday. I had a lot happen to me yesterday. More on that later in the hour. But I was railing about, why can't today be a day game? I think it'd be a lot of fun if this was an afternoon game, right? 3 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock Eastern time, 1 o'clock out in San Francisco. I know the TV networks all want them at night and whatnot, but you can be the only game in town. Schools might let out early. I don't know whether they'd all let out early in the States or whether TVs can get wheeled into classrooms. My kids watched the semifinal Canada-USA game and the women's gold medal game in their school last year. I don't know.
I hear you, and it would be great in Kansas City. It would be great in San Francisco, but it's different for us. We're off in the afternoon. People have, jobs.
No, I don't accept it. Right? But how If you and I were walking through here Friday at 2 p.m., it's kind of a ghost town, right? And a lot happens at night here. Yeah, we also work in a workplace where the evenings are pretty busy.
If you're in Bismarck, North Dakota, and you love baseball, but you're sitting selling insurance, guess what? You don't want it to be an afternoon game. You won't get able to see it.
Don't you remember that guy sitting in his cubicle in the Fargo TV show on FX when Billy Bob Thornton dragged him out and took him to the elevator and put him in the trunk of the car?
It was just a ploy to watch baseball.
He'd have rather a World Series game had been on. Well, we're excited for our next guest to join us, completing his third season. Not quite a full season, but he had a great 2013. Little bit of an injury bug, that's for sure, in 2014. But Jim Henderson, Calgary native, joins us from the Milwaukee Brewers. This World Series, tell us about it. You know the Giants a bit better, Jim, but it's so unique. Two teams under 90 wins both make the World Series. It's certainly now about the hot team in October, maybe as opposed to the best teams. How do you view it?
They're two great teams with two different teams. The Giants are a little more experienced, more veteran guys, but then everybody's been waiting for the Royals to kind of come around with their prospects, and now they're kind of taking advantage of these guys. I mean, they're just on this roll, and they just can't seem to get off of it, so it's going to be hard to push the Royals off the roll they're on.
Canadian Jim Henderson of the Milwaukee Brewers, our guest on Brady and Walker. You look at that NLCS matchup, and obviously it was the Giants, it was the Cardinals. You see a lot of St. Louis there in the Central, and I mean, I don't know if we're in that day where there's a team like that in the American League that is just so professional and you always expect them to be at the top of the heap like the St. Louis's and the San Frans. What is it from the outside perspective about those organizations?
They find a way to win. I kind of expected that San Francisco-St. Louis series to go seven just because they just always find a way to win.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it with the Giants this postseason is the heroes like Ishikawa. You got Crawford in the wild card game. The bottom of the order is actually hitting home runs. The guys that you don't really haven't really stepped up during the season are stepping up in the postseason. So that's kind of a magical thing when you get to the playoffs is you kind of have some heroes that you never really expected. So that's what the Giants got going for them right now. You never know who's going to win the game for them.
Both teams' bullpens have been very good throughout the postseason, and maybe it's what you need. But Kansas City especially, it's been the single biggest difference for this team between winning and losing. The playoffs, is that kind of the classic time where we see the great benefit of what it is that you do?
Special. That's a special bullpen at Kansas City. Usually, you know, you'll see in the postseason, you'll see like your starter coming back and going to the bullpen and making a big impact out of the bullpen. But Kansas City does not need that help. They have that lockdown bullpen, and it's going to be really, really important for San Francisco to score off the starters for Kansas City. And that's going to be the difference maker for both teams is those starters because those bullpens are so good.
We asked this question in Toronto because this year the bullpen was such a dumpster fire. And a year ago when seemingly everybody on this Blue Jays team struggled, the bullpen was terrific. Why are they so volatile? Why is it so difficult to predict year to year, right? Detroit's such a great team. They've never been able to figure out the bullpen, right? You spend 10 years in the minors, and then in 2013, you have a great season with the Brewers bullpen. What is the reason for that volatility?
It's hard to explain. As you go year to year, you don't get a lot of innings as a reliever, so maybe that's a thing, maybe that's an issue. Whereas you're a starter, you can, you know, you're going out there and you can throw 200 innings a season. You kind of get in the groove. Whereas a reliever, you get streaky, just like a hitter. You can have a few bad games in a row, and all of a sudden, you know, especially if you're a late inning guy, you get a few games in a row, and you're going to be out of that role. And then you're in a role you're not, you know, used to, and you kind of get bounced around. So the bullpen is kind of, that's maybe why you see it go year to year. Teams have good bullpens and bad bullpens because really it's a streaky kind of thing. You just need to kind of get on a roll. All depends on how the manager uses you, puts you in a good situation, gives you the chance to succeed. So that's what it is. I mean, some guys succeed in different roles, some guys don't, and then you just get in the groove.
Is there such a thing as that being contagious, right? They say hitting's contagious, and you look at Kansas City, it seems everybody they bring in does their job, whereas, you know, you have a team that struggles, and one guy can't hold a lead, and it seems that everybody falls into the same trap. Do you feel that pressure in the pen where if one guy's getting the outs, boy, you better do that job too?
Yeah, you feed off each other, definitely. I mean, yeah, just like hitting is contagious. I know from my experience in the bullpen, you guys, you're your own team out there. Everybody works together as a team, as a unit. So that's kind of that camaraderie you have with each other, and you bring it out there to the game mound. You know, you pick each other up too. And when you're in a relief corps, if you leave runner stranded, or if a starter leaves runner stranded, you come in there and you get the job done. You pick up your teammates in a way that hitters can't really do. So it's a big thing, you know. And you're a team within yourself out there. So that's what's important when it comes postseason.
Canadian Jim Henderson, relief pitcher of the Milwaukee Brewers, joins us on Brady and Walker. Tell us about the season for your club. And I was a difficult one in a lot of ways. Maybe it mirrored what we saw here in Toronto. You get out to that big lead. Of course, you know, you had a trying season. You get hurt. You only ended up pitching 11 and a third innings this season. But even just sitting there watching the rest of the guys kind of have this division crumble away a little bit, what was that like?
It's tough to watch. You know, it's one of those things where things just went wrong at the wrong times, or the pitching went south, and then all of a sudden the pitching picked it up late in the season, and the hitting kind of scoring their runs. But, you know, with our team and playing in our park, you need to score runs, and when that doesn't happen, you know, we have a great staff, but you give up a few runs and all of a sudden you're losing games. We're built around hitting, so that was the part that kind of what fell apart for us at the end of the season. So it gives you a sour taste in your mouth, but you got to look at how good we were for most of the season. We were in first place for 150 something games, so we can't dwell on what happened at the end of the season and look forward to next season and what we did well.
All right, Jim, thanks for this. Enjoy the rest of the World Series. We appreciate you taking time.
Thank you.
There's Jim Henderson joining us from the Milwaukee Brewers. We lost him at the end there. So let me get this straight. Central Memorial High School, Central, from Calgary, Alberta.
I didn't go to high school with him.
No, but he did. And kind of a late bloomer as far as major leaguers go.
Oh, he's an amazing story.
So when you saw him sort of start to ascend a couple of years ago, get called up to the Brewers, he'd been playing a lot of years in Huntsville. He was on the Nashville AAA team for the Brewers in the Pacific Coast League.
We've been talking a lot about Steve Nash. Today, he might have played his last game, right, in the NBA, and he's an amazing, unlikely story, right? Jim Henderson is not Steve Nash, but it's very unlikely. He played in the Western Major Baseball League. I mean, him and Johnny Axford are kind of the only, and they were teammates, ironically enough, they're the only really two guys to come out of that league in the prairies, but he spent 10 years kicking around the minors, right? He's one of those guys, and when you get, I don't know, you tell me, 6, 7 years in, and you're riding buses. How long do you stick it out?
Yeah, and it's amazing he has and got his major league deal, and really was the Brewers' most reliable closer last year. You know, they're coming off some good years from John Axford 3, 4, 5 years ago.
Sure, I mean Francisco Rodriguez is there now, and he had a bit of a rejuvenation, but he was playing in for their AAA team in Nashville, and finally at the age of whatever it was, 30-something, he got the call and has been up in the bigs ever since.
But hopefully healthy and hopefully a great chance to make the Brewers in the course of the season. The Brewers used 21 pitchers. They had some injuries coming out of that bullpen a lot of the time. They converted Zach Duke back to the bullpen, so they were busy trying to stay in contention with their particular bullpen. And here's hoping Henderson can be part of it next year.
6:34, Brady and Walker. Do want to give you an update on our Joel Colburn bet. Feeling a little guilty. A little
you
guilty.
Don't.
Well, no, I do and I don't. Because here's a guy that is first in the NHL in assists.
Two
and,
more last
and
night.
And last in goals. Tied for last in goals. And our bet had to do with
goals,
which and, is kind of ironic.
And as you've admitted, you would have accepted anywhere south of 40 points, you would have thought I'm going to leap like a shark on tuna. That's easy money, right? That's an easy pull for you to yank that in. He had two assists less. How bad? The Carolina Hurricanes might want this more than we think. They put up 16 shots on Jonas Hiller last night in Calgary, and yep, still looking for that first win. Very bad in a 5-0 loss.
We got to talk about this, the Hurricanes, how bad they are, and why the time to trade Eric Staal is right friggin' now. Trade him.
Also, some great audio coming up at 6:51 after Best and Worst. We promised to squeeze it in from the head coach of the Sudbury Wolves, who we've all been there. We've all asked one question too many of an athlete or a coach. Maybe about eight questions too many were asked after a recent loss to the Sioux Greyhounds.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Always the best sports talk on Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Third and two for the Broncos. They got the one-on-one coverage. He's got his man beat. And it's Sanders for the second time. Touchdown to the Broncos.
6:43, Brady and Walker, good morning. Are the Denver Broncos once again the absolute team to beat in the AFC? I'm Andrew Walker. He's Greg Brady. Were you a little surprised that the offense appeared almost too easy for Denver last night?
It's gotten really easy for them, yeah. Look what they've done since that Seattle loss in Seattle. They had a bye week, 41 against Arizona, 31 against the Jets. And even that Jets game, we're going, what's wrong with Denver? Why are they letting them hang around? But then they've pummeled just in the last 5 days. They've outscored San Fran and San Diego. Admittedly, both games in Denver, 77-38. They're like a fast break basketball team. They are punishing teams. They'll go to New England next Sunday for a 4 o'clock game. And there's not a doubt in too many people's minds. This isn't the Brady Manning toss-up ender of years past. I think it's all, they're biding their time. They're going to win their 13 games. They're going to be the one seed and then have the first weekend of the playoffs off. They're the only team we're sitting there wondering what their playoff fate is going to be. Because even last year in the NFC, didn't you think halfway through, you're like, would Denver be the third best team in the NFC? Would they be the fourth best
team? Maybe fourth if you throw Green Bay in there. Yeah.
Maybe we're not taking Dallas seriously enough. Maybe we should be looking at Green Bay and what they've done in the last month. But universally, it'll just feel this morning like Denver's the best team in football. And until someone beats them, and until someone gets on a huge roll in the NFC, we might even think that till mid-January.
Let me ask you this, though. What has changed, right? Like, are we falling into... I don't know if I want to call it a trap, but maybe it's a trap. Are we falling into this conversation again where we're like goldfish and we can't remember what happened 5 minutes ago? The Denver Broncos, what's different this year than last year? Do they look more impressive than Peyton Manning set the all-time record for touchdown passes last year. What's different? What makes us think that the Broncos would fare any better against Seattle in the big game this year?
Because I don't think we see a team in the NFC that is Seattle, that had the threat Seattle started to have halfway through the season, or even San Francisco started to have.
We don't?
Do you think Dallas is as good as either Seattle or San Francisco? But maybe it's a track record thing, and maybe it's...
It is a track record thing.
It's, hey, Tony, you're telling Tony Romo's going to be great three straight playoff weekends? I like Tony Romo.
But if you look at how they are playing, there's no reason to think that they couldn't.
Do you think there are different results? Like last year, I'm looking at Denver's games. There was that famous 51-48 win over Dallas where Romo just shredded them until the last possession and he threw a bad pick and they lost by the field goal.
Right.
39-33, they lost to Indy, right? Indy came back on them and won that game when Peyton Manning went back to Indy. And then that famous, they lost in overtime to New England. And I mean, what was the score? 28, I'm looking it up, 28-3 at the half? It was 24-0 at the half.
Yeah, people left at the half.
So
yeah.
This defense doesn't look like it's a team that's going to leak huge leads like they did last
year, right? That's the key to everything,
like if
isn't
New England, I'll say I'm wrong. If New England hangs with them next Sunday... Great, but I mean, Randall the Handle was on yesterday, who co-hosts The Bottom Line with Jory Mittelstadt. Sundays at 10 right here on SportsCent 590 The Fan. And I didn't scoff when he said, hey, Broncos are just, this is who they are right now, and they're just steamrolling teams, and don't give San Diego and that 9.5 points, don't even give it a second thought. We're like, don't even give it a second thought. It's not a consideration. They're beating teams by 14, 20, 24 points pretty consistently. So, we'll see where it goes next week in Foxborough. But I just think the die's been cast. They're going to win their 13 games, and we don't know who they'll play in the second round of the playoffs, but they're going to play somebody as the one seed.
6:47, Brady and Walker. We have some great audio coming up in about 4 minutes and involves the head coach of the Sudbury Wolves. I feel a little bad because he's getting killed for this today. He had to publicly apologize. Mm-hmm. But it's also very, very funny, his interaction with a group of
very human
local reporters.
You never know when someone's you're just sitting there talking, and you never know when someone's going to start dropping F-bombs on you. It could happen anytime. Well, you could do it to me in 5 minutes off the air. I don't know.
Yeah, Paul Fixter, the head coach of the Sudbury Wolves, will play that audio for you in a couple of minutes. 6:48, let's do best and worst.
Best.
Antonio Gates.
And worst.
Antonio Banderas.
With Brady and Walker.
That seems reasonable.
He is from Spain, I believe.
That's
Is that Banderas?
Better be sure.
He's not.
Don't have to be sure.
Not from Mexico. Although he was in the movie Once Upon a Time in Mexico, I believe, which is very confusing.
So best win, worst loss. There were no Mexican soccer results yesterday to mention.
No.
I love that league.
Best win, worst loss, best player, worst player. Can I win anything? How does it work?
It does not happen that way. There's no voting. Best win.
All right, you start.
Let me give it to the Vancouver Canucks. We don't know how many times.
Oh, shocker.
Okay, sorry, continue. If I'd have said the Red Wings, you'd have said shocker.
Oh, shocker.
Yeah, right. Eight favorite teams. Ryan Miller, 31 save performance. Vancouver gets some balanced scoring. Chris Higgins in the first period. They get a goal from something called Lyndon Vay. All right, I know who that is. Barely. But Vancouver goes into St. Louis, and it's nice for Ryan Miller. He barely had a chance in St. Louis, and that said, it all looked good, didn't it, for the Blues? Up 2-0 on the Blackhawks. He's winning close games against Corey Crawford. Four straight defeats, and there goes Ryan Miller's big Stanley Cup aspiration. So a good team win for Vancouver to beat the Blues. And the Blues, without Paul Stastny, they're looking a little human right now. They're not getting the scoring from a lot of teams that you might have, a lot of players you might have expected. They've won 2 out of 6 games.
TJ Oshie, who became a bit of an Olympic hero and broke out last year in the second half, he has yet to score this season, which is no good for St. Louis. Do me a favor. I want worst player and I want worst loss. I'm giving worst loss to the Boston Bruins, and it's not so much that they are still hovering around 500 and lost to the Islanders 3-2. It's the fact they lost their captain. If you're just getting up this morning, Zdeno Chara, who is usually healthy, is out for anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks with an injured knee ligament. He stood up at the blue line and hit John Tavares last night. Looked pretty innocuous, but his knee kind of buckled, and Chara's out. This is a team that's struggling anyway and has some holes in their lineup and will be reeling from this Tyler Seguin deal 10 years from now. Peter Chiarelli, boy, does he want a do-over on it, I would guarantee you. But no Chara for the Bruins.
Okay, I'll grab another best before you do your second worst. Let's give it to Ryan Johansson. Much maligned by a lot of folks, including his own president. Selfish guy. He's in with the wrong agent. Well, he's just delivering right now. He's got points in every game this season. 2-goal performance last night. Columbus goes into San Jose and wins. And he's got 5 goals, 4 assists, 9 points in those 6 games. Andrew, if this was the Sochi Olympics year, would he be on people's radar? Or is he still too young, still too much developing at the age of 22 to be on? Could he be the Matt Duchene of 2014, 2015 and crack an Olympic team if this was the year?
Yes and no. It's incredibly difficult to crack that roster, as we know, as a centerman, right? I mean, guys like Eric Staal, you know, weren't making this Olympic club. That said, he would totally be on the radar. Yes, he'd totally be at the Olympic camp in the summer.
So maybe the World Cup in a year and a half, he's going to have strong consideration.
Worst player last night. Alexander Semin of the Carolina Hurricanes is something to watch right now. Now, the Hurricanes, here we are. They're 7 games into their season. They don't care. Honey Badger don't care. They're god-awful. They got dummied in Calgary. Now, the Flames aren't world beaters. They'll work you hard. But they lost 5-0 last night. Alex Semin, he wants to be anywhere right now but on a hockey rink. And I'm telling you what, Carolina, they might be worse than Buffalo. They already lost to Buffalo this season. Now, Eric Staal's going to make them better and might take them out of the Connor McDavid situation. They got to trade Eric Staal right now, but Semin's a conversation. It's unbelievable.
How many bodies can he throw overboard on Carolina, though? Yuri Tulusi's in a contract year. Andre Sekera's in a contract year. These would be useful players on contending teams. for the bottom end of their lineup.
It's a dumpster fire, and everyone in Buffalo knew they were going to be bad. There was a chance that, hey, maybe the Stalls and Skinner and Semin and Ward has a bounce back here, and maybe Ryan Murphy takes a step up, and you get yourself into the playoff conversation. Not happening, though. All right, from the Ontario Hockey League, the Sudbury Wolves are not a very good team right now.
1-10,
yeah. And they got beaten pretty soundly by Sault Ste. Marie, who's 9-2. Their head coach, Paul Fixter, had this back and forth with his local media.
What's the question,
The frustration must just be mounting for you guys. Obviously, it's a tough, really tough start to the season.
Are you asking me if I'm frustrated?
Yeah,
I am. I'm very frustrated.
What is it that you know that's so frustrating? Is it just not getting results, or the guys not working for you, or what do you think?
I don't like losing. I mean, losing sucks, and that's frustrating. And you're 2-2 after one against a very good hockey club. Hit the bed in a second.
Do you think the work ethic was...
Whose, theirs or ours?
Yours. I thought you guys worked hard.
Yeah, good. That's good. Yeah,
well, I don't know.
Well, that's your opinion. That's your opinion. We worked hard. There you go. Good for you. What's the question?
Did you work hard?
F*** you. F*** talking to me like that.
Well, how are you acting towards us? All we're doing is trying to do an interview.
Well, ask me a question then. Did we work hard?
Yeah.
For 20 minutes, as I told Lincoln.
Oh, that's terrific. That's terrific. I understand, but just the FU drop just out of nowhere.
I've been in that. Juniors, you know what it's like. I've been in that hallway in the Sioux. You got a 3-4 hour bus ride home. You're getting back at 2:30. Probably seeing your family, and you're like, "Is it all worth it?" They're 1-10, and it's not his first rodeo. This guy's been a head coach at Hershey. Coached a lot of the Avs prospects in the mid-2000s, but he's not going to lose his job over this, but he may lose his job just about wins and losses. And
yeah, well, he did issue an apology for his profanity on the Sudbury Wolves website. Now, he didn't apologize to the reporters in question. Maybe he did privately. Pretty good.
It's a bad moment. Yeah.
You.
Now, I thought he was the guy trying to take a selfie with Anderson Cooper, but I'm told that's a totally different guy we'll have to talk
awful,
about.
Awful, awful.
Yeah.
6:55, Brady and Walker. At 7:02, the Blue Jays make news for a couple reasons yesterday. They want to re-sign Melky Cabrera. Are they going to use the money from their Rays ticket prices? Yes, predictably, people weren't overly happy. We'll discuss it.
You're helping with beer revenue.
That is
true. A cent from every beer that gets sold goes to Melky Cabrera's pockets.
You could sign Melky Cabrera and Prince Fielder from what I drank at games last year.